95.7 Ben FM Philadelphia presents Her Story, hosted by Kathy Romano. Her Story is a weekly tribute to women making a major difference in the lives of others by telling her story.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
95.7 Ben FM presents Her Story with Kathy Romano.
Welcome to Her Story. I'm your host, Kathy Romano. Today's guest is a board-certified music therapist who works with hospice patients and their families. Pietra Del Pizzo, also known as Petey, sings to terminally ill patients. Before working in hospice care, Petey spent hours doing an internship with adults with mental illness who have committed murders and sex crimes. She finds music not only to be healing to her patients, but to herself as well. Please welcome Petey to Her Story. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
So this is a very interesting profession. Obviously why I have you here today. But before we get into music therapy, give me a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Ardmore, Havertown area. From the age of 5 until 22, I went to Catholic school. But I went to St. Denis School for grade school and then Marion Mercy Academy for high school and then Duquesne University for college. I'm one of 5 kids, just a big Italian family.
Where are you in the lineup of siblings?
I'm the 4th of 5, so I'm the last girl, so I'm the baby girl. But then my brother is 14 months younger than me.
What did you major in at Duquesne?
My major was music therapy with a minor in psychology.
Okay, so you started out knowing that you wanted to do music therapy.
Yes, yes. Actually, in high school, I went on a service trip and we were at a homeless shelter. And at the homeless shelter, I was trying to speak Spanish to this one gentleman because I was taking Spanish class. And a few tables over, my friends were speaking about me saying, Petey can sing. She can sing really well. And I looked around the room and it was just this atmosphere of depression. I mean, there were battered women and children and it was so sad and depressing. My friend said, Petey, you should sing. I looked around. I said, I don't think this is appropriate time or place. And then the homeless gentleman looked at me and he said, what, you won't sing to me because I'm homeless? And I said, well, now I have to sing. So I sang the first song that came to my head, which was My Girl. And everyone at the homeless shelters joined in with me singing. And the atmosphere changed from one of hopelessness and depression to hope. And in that moment, I had no idea what music therapy was, but I was like, I need to do this for the rest of my life. It was like love at first sight.
And that was in high school?
Yeah, I was 17.
Wow.
And then I did research and my mom helped me and I found music therapy.
So then what does it take to become a music therapist? What's the schooling like?
So you have to major in it. And only certain schools, more and more schools are making it so that you can have music therapy as a major. But you have certain courses you have to take. I majored in music therapy. So you're like a music student. But at the same time, you have to get all your core classes done and you have to get your therapy classes done. And most of the time you should minor in psychology or counseling or something. So you do that for about 4.5 years. And then you have to do a 1,000-hour, 40-hour a week internship. And usually that is for free. Mine was for free. After you complete that, you have to take a test. And that test, if you don't pass it, then you're not board certified. And you just keep taking it until you can pass it.
What is the test like?
Oh my God, it's so hard. It's the hardest test. I think my class, I remember, I think by the time I graduated, there were 5 students. But when I started, there was about 10. But, you know, they weed you out. And I think myself and one other person were the only ones that passed it our first time.
Wow.
And it was very difficult. And most people had to take it 2 or 3 times. It's just, it's a hard test. And it's a lot of studying. And they ask you music theory questions in addition to psychology questions. And sometimes you'll get the test, because music therapists work with a variety of populations, you'll get the test. And you could have done your internship in psych, but the test is all about children with autism. And you're like, oh my God. I was lucky mine was all about psych and I did my internship in psych.
It's a written test.
Yep. It's a written test.
Is it just a written test or are there other elements to it?
So that is just the written test. But in order to be eligible, your supervisor has to pass you. So if you can't play guitar, sing, or you're not proficient in percussion, you probably won't even get an internship. Once you get the internship and you work on those skills, your supervisor checks off if you've passed or not.
So talk a little bit about your internship. You worked with people who committed murders and sex crimes.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. So yeah, so it was like a jail / hospital. So the one unit was that, and then there was other units that were might not have committed crimes yet, or they were attempting suicide or suicidal ideation, and instead of the cops taking them to jail or something like that, they brought them to that hospital. There was a whole unit of clients where they had committed murders and sex crimes, and I used music interventions to work on non-musical goals. A lot of it was dealing with the struggles of being there. And I truly believe what I learned there is that human beings will do whatever it takes to feel safe. I think that what we need in life is Erickson's beliefs of food, shelter, and water and safety. And when we don't feel safe, we will do whatever it takes to feel safe. I mean, I had clients have voices tell them that they need to kill their parents. Things like that, where I don't know what it would be like to be haunted by voices all day long and tormenting you all day long and really convincing you and making you believe that this person's trying to hurt you or you have to do this in order for God to love you or crazy things.
Whatever
like
it is. Yeah. So how then do you think music therapy helped people like that?
People who suffer from schizophrenia, I had a few of those clients even tell me music is the only thing that stops the voices. And they only got music therapy once a week. So for an hour, once a week, the voices would stop. Even medications would not help. But music, for some reason, stimulated something in their brain. Music is able to break down walls and boundaries and is able to be stimulated everywhere in the brain, not just one area. So if you're struggling in one area, music has a way to tap into you in another way and then use your psychology and help work on those non-musical goals of decreasing stress, increasing self-expression, decreasing anger, increasing emotional expression, different stuff like that.
Now, you work with hospice patients, so you're working with people who are terminally ill or people who are actively dying. Is it correct to say that?
Yeah. So most of my patients, I mean, I've had some clients on for like 2 years, which is very long, but I'm a part of their journey. So when someone's actively dying, it's a very different experience. I am called to their bedside and the last sense to leave our body is hearing. So
the last sense that goes is hearing. So even if they're not conscious, they could potentially still be hearing us.
Yes. Oh, yeah, for sure. They definitely hear you. And yeah, I mean, I've had clients, I feel that they hold on until they get whatever peace they need, or they'll hold on until that child comes from Nebraska and says goodbye. And they'll hold on until they get that closure they need to feel safe enough to let go and pass.
Wow. And you see that?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do you prepare yourself for going into a room where, say, this is going to happen and you have to sing to them? How do you prepare yourself and musically?
As a music therapist, I have a bag of tricks of songs I could do, but I just go in always with an open mind and an open heart. And always the first thing I say to myself is, this isn't about me. This is about the family and the patient. And as soon as you do that, any feelings of being tearful or wanting to cry or emotional, they go out the window. And if I am tearful or emotional, it's usually afterwards. And that does happen. Sometimes you're driving home and a song comes on and you're just bawling and you're like, I don't know why I'm crying, but I'm crying. Or, you know, you might get home and your boyfriend says something and then you're just burst into tears and he's like, I'm sorry. I'm like, no, it's just stressful. But that's where self-care is really important. When I'm walking into that room, I'm really just thinking about, how can I be present? How can I help my clients? How can I be present for their family? I want to be able to give them what they need.
And I would imagine that not everything works for everybody. This is therapy, so everybody's different.
Yeah.
So how do you choose what you're going to do with either the person who's on hospice or their family?
So if I've had the patient who's on hospice for a while, I know them pretty well. So I'll know what songs I'll come in and I'll say, I want to play songs for this patient that I know they like, whether that's, I know they're a country fan and I'll pick those types of songs, or I have certain songs that I personally will play and I'll say, is it okay if I play this song? I just like to play the song for clients because I feel it helps them to pass over. It's kind of my closure with them. And families are usually receptive, but you feel it out. I mean, when you go in the room, you can feel when a family needs you and they want you there. And you can feel when they just want you to play a song or two and then they want you to leave. So I think it's about also not taking it personally or not feeling like everyone's going to need you for 2 hours. You just got to be able to read people and feel it out and feel like they don't need me, or you know what, they need me. So I need to stay and give them what I can give.
So if people are giving you requests or asking you to play something, I would imagine that your catalog is pretty large.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I feel like it's not that big compared to other music therapists. My supervisor in undergrad, she had a huge repertoire. Her binder was so big, hundreds and hundreds of songs. And I do know a good chunk of songs, and I have so many songs memorized, but I still always feel like I never know enough. There's always a song that someone names and I'm like, I have no idea what that is. But I try to then, you know, learn that and add that to my book and just always adding songs.
How quick can you learn a song?
Depending on the difficulty of it, pretty quick. I mean, I had a client, he made me so nervous. He was like, can you learn this song? It just is so meaningful. And he played it. And for me, I was glad that it was a song that had a simple melody and simple chords, simple rhythm to it. I was like, okay, I can do some version of this. So I listened to that song once and then played it.
And what was that song?
It was Just Breathe by Pearl Jam.
Oh, right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. What about any odd requests?
Yeah, the Chiquita Banana song, that was an odd request.
And what, it just meant something to the family?
Yeah, so for them, the children had a memory of being little kids and their mom would be in the kitchen and she'd be getting a snack ready for them and she'd start singing the Chiquita Banana song. You know, she's cutting up bananas for them and put it on their table and it would just crack the kids up. And so it was a fond memory for them.
Do you have any clients that are children?
No, I do not. Believe it or not, just in the business that I've done, I have sang funerals for children and for young adults. And those are definitely the hardest funerals to sing. But that's me as a musician. Not every music therapist you meet that works in hospice will offer that to their clients or to families. I just always offer that because I feel comfortable performing and because my dad raised me in a band and in that type of business. But not every music therapist you meet will feel comfortable enough to offer that. But I always offer it to my clients, and for my families and friends who lose children or loved ones, I've had the privilege of getting to sing at their funerals. And it's, oh my God, it's so, children singing at children's funerals is probably the most difficult.
Yeah, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. I've heard of music therapy before. I've heard of art therapy.
Oh, awesome.
Different types of therapy, but you don't hear about it all that often. Is this something that, I mean, if somebody's interested in this, they're hearing the interview, is this something they can find? Can they find someone like you to come do this for them?
Oh, yeah. There's independent people that just work out of their homes and they'll just take clients on that way. Or there's different businesses. I used to work for Music Works in Havertown with Jerry O'Leary. They work with children. They work with people from 2 to in their 80s with developmental disabilities, emotional disturbance. I think what the hardest part about it is as a therapist, and this is with creative arts therapies in general, they're not covered by insurances. And what's really great about Music Works is Lori O'Leary, who works there, she fought to make it in that area and in certain regions covered by insurance. So you just have to pay a copay.
Oh, wow.
So for a lot of people, it's hard because it can be expensive. And it's unfortunate because it's so helpful. And so it's so helpful. And there is a benefit to it. And people don't get to see that.
My aunt passed away a few years ago. She was on hospice and we went to her house. They had her in her home. And I don't know if it was along with the hospice worker or separate or what it was, but her kids had the lights were kind of dim and they had music playing. Mm-hmm. So people would come over to visit and we went over to see her and she wasn't conscious. She was doing a few things that we knew she was still listening, but it was so peaceful. It was so much more peaceful than, say, in a hospital. And I know some people have to be in the hospital when it's their time to pass. It was very sad to see her go, but she kind of just went peacefully.
What you're describing is therapeutic music, which is what music therapists use, is that idea of therapeutic music and closing the lights and speaking quietly. Those are all really good things to do because towards the end of life, sometimes we can become overstimulated and we can become really restless and agitated. And our first thing is, oh, they're in pain. But really, it's just our senses are really sensitive and we need to just lower the lights, or we need to put on soothing music, or we need to speak quietly, or we need to be gentle with our touch. And you said that some people have to die in the hospital. What's really hard is I feel like there's so many misconceptions with hospice, and people think that that is the only option, and that is just so not true.
That what is the only option?
Dying in a hospital, or that this was the way that they had to go. And sometimes the client is not accepting of their prognosis, or they have this idea of, I need to fight, and people think hospice is about giving up, and that is not what hospice is at all. Hospice is about creating new goals and quality of life. And I hate when we have patients or people that are pending on our list that we could have on our service, but either the family won't hear it or is in denial, or the client is in denial, and then they die in the hospital. Because it's, you're right, it's a completely different experience, and it doesn't have to end that way. It doesn't have to end with all these noises and people rushing by, and it makes it more difficult to let go.
And it doesn't have to be that way.
It doesn't.
So you actually work for a hospice company.
Brookdale Hospice, we have a great team. We have nurses, we have chaplains, we have social workers, we have massage therapy, and we have me, a music therapist. We service all of Bucks and Montgomery and Chester County. What happens is usually you'll get a case manager, which is one of the nurses, and they'll create a care plan for you. And in that care plan, they'll say a CNA will come daily, or, you know, the social worker is going to come and do their assessment. And then the social worker will say, okay, I'm going to see this patient weekly, or I'm going to see this patient twice a month. And same with the chaplain and myself. Now, not everyone wants music therapy, and not everyone is open to it. So we never force any of these therapies or any social worker chaplain on people. So the way this looks and the way hospice is dependent on the patient's needs. So some people are like, oh, I don't want all that noise. I don't want all that stuff. And the thing is, we're trained in this end of life, and we're trained in dying. So you call the shots. If you say you only want the nurse to come once a month, the nurse is only coming once a month. You say you don't want a CNA and all the rest of the people, you won't have those people.
But if they want it, they can have
it. They can have it. And they can have a full team, and they can die with dignity, and they can know that their loved ones aren't left alone, that they'll have that support. And something that we offer is 13 months of bereavement. And the same thing with that hospice program, the bereavement is the same way as the way it looks is dependent on your needs. If you want phone calls, visits, extra references, if you want.
Does insurance cover hospice?
Yes, it's a Medicare and it's a Medicaid benefit. Yeah. So people pay into it their whole lives, not knowing it, and then they die not using it. It's a free thing, and it's, you've been paying into it your entire life, and you've been paying for all these services. And it's actually really funny sometimes. I had this one client, and she passed recently, but she, when I would come and play for her, the first time it was me and the social worker, and she kept looking at the social worker and was like, do I pay her? How much do I pay her? And I was like, I'm free. No. And she's like, do I tip her? And she was like, no, it's free. Like, it's for you. Aww. She gets paid. You don't have to worry about it. This is a benefit to you.
Oh, that's really cute. Hospice care, is that solely in home care, or do you also work in the hospitals?
So it's wherever someone calls home. Yeah. And so it could be in the hospitals, nursing homes, in their actual house. Sometimes we'll have patients that want to go back to the hospital. Our goal is, we don't want you to go to the hospital. We don't want you to have that stress on your body, on your family, on everyone to go in and out in the hospital. So we want to keep you out of the hospital as much as possible. But sometimes families and loved ones want to go to the hospital.
If that's where they feel comfortable.
If that's what they want, then that's what we'll do.
So have you ever been actually singing to a patient as they pass?
Yes, 5 patients. So the first one I ever experienced was all by myself. It was just me and the client, and I was singing In the Arms of the Angels from that commercial with the SPCA.
Yeah.
And I was singing that song, and we got to the refrain, and he took his last breath. I remember the family couldn't be there. For some reason, they couldn't be there. They were on their way there. And I was like, I'll give him a call. And I got to tell them, you know, your loved one didn't pass by himself, and that he actually passed while I was singing to him. And it was a beautiful experience. And they were so thankful and grateful to hear that, because, I mean, imagine the guilt. You're trying to get to be with your loved one, and they're gone, and you can't say goodbye. Another client that passed, it was me and his son and him. The patient was struggling with religion. And so I did a song that I think of when I think of struggling, Alleluia.
Sure.
The way I interpret that is just struggling with religion and really struggling with your spirituality. And the son told me that he was very skeptical about music therapy and what could this do? And he passed during that song. And his son looked at me and just started bawling and was like, oh my gosh, I'm so thankful that you came and you did this. And honestly, when you walked in with your guitar, I was so skeptical, but that was just such a beautiful way for my father to pass. And I think he got what he needed.
You seem like a very old soul in a very young, beautiful body.
Thank you.
Even just talking to you, it's calming.
Yeah. Some people are like, how are you so calm? And sometimes I'm internally freaking out, or I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to navigate this or get through this? Especially in situations with the psychiatric center with people who committed murders and sex crimes. Sometimes they were unstable. I had a patient suing at me once, and I remember in the moment I'm thinking, what do I do? But people on the outside were like, you remain so calm. And I think that's just something I learned from all my training and from my supervisor, Audrey Hazek. She was always super calm. And even if she was internally freaking out, she always remained calm in situations. I think I picked that up from her. And
are you spiritual?
Oh, yeah. People ask right away, what's it like working in hospice? And I mean, of course, you question your own spirituality and you question your religion and you question all of that. For me, it strengthened it for me. There's things I've seen and done that you'd have to be there to witness it. But I know that there's something bigger than us out here. I know it because I've seen it and I felt it. When you see and feel things like that, you just know it's not a belief anymore. It's like a fact internally. But I grew up Catholic, so I think religion is for people. It's not for God or whatever you believe is out there. It's for us.
Do you meditate?
Some ways, yeah. So I do a lot of relaxation techniques where it's meditative and there's guided imagery, which is a form of music therapy you can do. I don't typically meditate myself in the traditional sense. It's like my own things that I've picked up and what I like to do. But I definitely pray every day and I definitely make my own music every day, which kind of feels like meditation to me sometimes.
Sure. Well, it could be a form of meditation for you. I ask that because you're very calming. So in stressful situations, like you said, you were able to stay calm. So I just wondered how you did that. And you say that this is healing for you too. How mm-hmm. so?
I remember when I was working in the psychiatric center, when you're that young, you're 22, 23, you're just trying to find your way in the world. You're trying to figure out why you're here. You graduated college, that party phase is over. You're in the real world. What's going on? And it gives me purpose. I was sitting next to a client and we played Stand By Me. And he just looked at me and his eyes were filled up. He was there for committing a murder and he was going to be there the rest of his life. He looked at me and he just said, why are you here? And at the time I was a student. I said, I just want to help. And he was like, I don't understand. Why do you want to help me? And I could tell that was the first time someone had ever looked at him and said, I want to help you. These were people that society had thrown away and said, you're going to stay here forever. You can't work on yourself. These messages of you're a lost cause. And that just gave me healing within myself because it gives me purpose. I know why I'm here on this earth. I know why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm where I'm supposed to be. I need to help people because that gives me meaning.
But that takes a special person. I would imagine that you would understand that somebody else on the outside, looking at somebody who murdered somebody, doesn't necessarily want to help them.
For me, the way I've always looked at it, I want to make sure I explain it in a good way. I just feel like within us all, we're not perfect and we all do things. I think of myself at my worst moments and I've done things that are just awful. I think about the child that, you know, you are as a kid. And I think about these people who have committed these crimes. They're there and I've heard their stories. I've heard their backgrounds. Now, this doesn't justify what they've done. What they've done is awful, but it's an understanding. But I see the child in them when I was working with them. I saw that kid. And just like in schools, no child left behind. I couldn't leave those kids behind. I saw the kid in him when he's looking at me saying, you want to help me? Yeah, I want to help you. I see the 8-year-old that was abandoned. I just can't leave that kid behind, even though he's a 40-year-old man sitting in front of me.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And it's interesting you say that because sometimes I'll see news stories and I immediately think of their parents. Mm. And I think, how did this person get here and what their poor parents might be going mm-hmm. through because mm-hmm. this person is doing whatever mm-hmm. they did.
Yeah. And sometimes I think with all my clients, I just try to have compassion for them. I just think if I were them, I put myself in their shoes. It's empathy. I just put myself in their shoes and I would think about if I had realized I did something wrong. And don't get me wrong, there were clients that I looked at them and I felt like I had seen the devil. But even then, I feel even more awful for them. I look at them and I'm like, wow, where is your soul? What happened? You know,
yeah.
Who took your soul? You know, so that's hard.
And having a job that has so much meaning. I have a friend who's looking to change her career. She's in her 40s and she's been in the same position for a really long time. And she has put a deadline on it. And she said, I'm leaving here. I want to change what I do. And I want to move on. I want to do something different because I kind of feel stuck here. And what she keeps saying to me, because of course I'm helping her look for jobs, is she said, I want something with meaning, whether it be a nonprofit organization. She loves animals. She wants to work maybe at some sort of rescue, but she's looking for something, she said, that will give meaning and that she feels like she's helping and giving back.
I know. I feel so lucky that I was able to find my passion in life so young. I feel so blessed and lucky for that, because it's rare. And I know that I'm kind of like a freak in that way, because many people search their whole lives trying to find their passion. My dad even tells me he didn't find his passion until I think he was in his 40s. He's a teacher at Malvern Prep. And I think I'm so lucky that I found it so young.
And sure. And how old are you?
I'm 26.
Yeah. You're only 26 years old, which is great. It's amazing.
I think what's really great about music therapy is that I can work with a variety of populations. I love what I'm doing now and I feel called to it now. But I think about being married or having children with this job. I don't know if I could do it the rest of my life. I have the time now at the age of 26. I'm by myself. I have all the time I need to take care of myself. But when you have children and a family and a life like that, you're taking care of them. So you're a caretaker all day and then you come home and you're a caretaker again. So I commend the nurses at my job who have like young kids. I'm like, I don't know how you do it.
Well, you know, and I can speak to that, not music therapy and having kids, but just being a working mother and you kind of figure it out. And I get up very early in the morning. And at first I thought, how am I going to do this? I'm going to be tired all day with kids. But it was actually easy because he was up early anyway, and I would get home in the middle of the afternoon and we would have all day together.
Oh, that's actually really nice.
Yeah, where a lot of moms have guilt about not being able to spend every minute with their child, and a lot of women can't. They have to go to work. But for me, I was working and I was still able to be home all afternoon with my son for years. I mean, he's in school now, but
that's awesome.
I was able to be home with him and we just went to bed together at 8 o'clock. Can you play a song, something that if you walked into a patient's room and they didn't give you any direction, they just wanted you to come in and play something.
Yeah, so this is a song I like to sing to clients. I sing to a lot of my clients this song with their families there, because I feel like something that's important for my patients' families is that they know that they're not alone and that their loved ones are there. So I sing this one a lot. It's Stand By Me.
When the night has come, land is dark and the moon is the only that we'll see. No, I won't be afraid. No, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by me. And darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Stand by me. Stand by me. Stand by me. If the sky that we look upon should tumble and fall, or the mountain should crumble to the sea, I won't cry, I won't cry. No, I won't shed a tear. Just as long as you stand by me. And darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me, stand by me. Whatever you're in trouble, go on, stand by me. Oh, won't you stand by me? Stand by me, stand by me, stand by me.
I don't know how everyone's not sobbing by the time you're finished playing.
Usually there's tears. I see tears a lot. So for me, that's always like a good sign. It's kind of strange if someone's dying in a bed right there and
no one's crying.
I'm a little alarmed when that happens. Yeah, music definitely brings out the tears. If, you know, there's some people that feel that no tears means you're strong. And when the music comes out and they're crying and they're apologetic, and I'm like, no, 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 no. This is a good thing. This is you, your body healing yourself. You're grieving.
This is all part of it.
That's healthy. Yeah.
So how did music play a part in your life growing up?
So my dad is a musician. He was in bands all his life. And he actually tells a story about my brother and I being like little kids in the basement. And he would play the trumpet and we would sit there. And he swears that's why myself and my brother are super musical. And we're actually the only ones that he put in the band.
The two young ones?
Yeah, the two youngest. He has five kids and four girls and a boy. But he put myself and my brother in the band. And he always says it's because, you know, I'd play the trumpet and play jazz and all this stuff. And they would be listening. And I think my sisters are definitely musical. But I think my brother is like a prodigy and he's like disgustingly amazing at music. I mean, he's one of those kids that like 4 years old would go to church and hear the 4-part harmony and then go home and play it on the piano at like 4 years old. So I think if my siblings, my sisters were in like a different family, they'd be super musical and they would have pursued it more. But being related to him, it's kind of hard.
By the way, you know, your parents kept trying until they had a boy, right?
Yeah, they did. That's why they named me Pietra. I have such a weird name because I'm named after my grandfather. It's traditional that
the first boy
is named after the father. My mom was like, I'm done with kids. Like, I can't do this anymore. Let's just change the O to an A. And then I was 5 months and they were like, well, we're pregnant. She found out that it was a boy.
Oh, my gosh. So what's your brother's name?
His name's Antonio. He's named after our great grandfather.
Okay. So you talk about your brother and your dad. You guys all play in a band together?
Yes. The band is called Del's Groove, the best wedding/event band out there.
And we've done stuff with Del's
yes.
Group before, so I know what you're talking about. And yes, you guys are amazing.
Wait, can I say something? I remember the first Camp Out for Hunger. I was 23. It was the first time I was in the band. And you said, oh, man, she has an amazing voice. And I was like, oh, my God, Kathy's talking about me. And my mom remembers that, too. My mom was like, oh, my goodness. She was talking about your voice.
You well, you do.
Thank you.
You have an amazing voice.
Thank
and
you.
I still think that.
Thank you. I always remember that. I was like, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. Okay, so Del's Groove, and then you play separately with your brother, too.
Yes, we're in a duo. It's just my brother and I, and we'll play like more bar scenes and parties and things like that. And we'll just do covers. Everyone's always like, what do you guys play? I just say a song, and he plays it. It's whatever I feel like,
so
honestly.
He's that good, too.
Yeah.
And does he do anything solo?
Playing out, performing?
Yeah, or a profession? What does he do for a living?
Oh, he just got a new job with my dad at Malvern Prep a music teacher. He went to school, though, with me at Duquesne University. His major was sound recording with composition as his concentration. So we write songs together and we always say we're going to work on an EP, but it hasn't come out yet because life has just been busy.
Well, you're still young and I think you should do that.
Thanks. I will work on it.
So if someone's interested in having music therapy for a family member, how do they go about finding out more information?
If you want to find out more information about music therapy, you could go to musictherapy.org. If you're interested in it as a profession, if you wanted to research that, there's also the certification cbmt.org, which is the certification of music therapy, and it gives you the requirements of music therapy as a profession, what goes into it, the domains we cover, and things like that.
What are the requirements prior to going to school for it?
So when I was going to schools, I had to not only take the SATs and get into the school academically, but I had to do auditions. You pick your main instrument, which mine was voice, and I would audition on voice. And then you have to take a music theory test. And then you have to do an oral test, an oral test, where they make you sing things and they make you do solfege and all this crazy stuff. And then they see where you're at on your piano skills. Any really good music school is going to make you do that.
So do you have to be able to play a number of instruments too?
You do. They look at the full package. Myself, I knew the basics of piano. I wasn't proficient at piano yet. They look at the full picture. So they're going to look at your testing scores for theory. They're going to look at your potential for aural and oral skills. And they're going to look at your main instrument.
So are you proficient in other instruments now?
Oh, yeah. So to be a music therapist, you need to play guitar, piano, and voice and percussion. And you need to be proficient on those instruments. One of those is usually you would consider your main instrument. My main instrument is voice.
If somebody wanted to hire you, how could they do that?
Well, I work with Brookdale Hospice. So
they can go through Brookdale.
If you ever wanted to call Brookdale and just find out more information about Brookdale Hospice, you would call 610 337-1101, and you would talk to Stephanie or Celeste.
And then what about Del's Groove or you and your brother? Do you have any upcoming shows?
We have a bunch of private events coming up with Del's Groove with weddings and things like that, and then hopefully we'll be on Camp Out for Hunger.
Yes, hopefully you'll be back at the Presidency Camp Out for Hunger in December.
I mean, you could go to delsgroove.com or you could go to our Facebook and like it, and you can get in contact with my dad, who is the owner of the band, that way. And then my brother and I post gigs and things like that on our personal pages, which is Pietra Teresa, or on Del's Groove Facebook page as well.
What do you and your brother go by?
Petey and Tony. Not very clever.
Okay. No, perfect. Why not? If you could give one bit of advice to the listeners today about anything, what would it be?
That's a hard question. I was not prepared
for that.
Sorry,
you can think about it.
I think I would tell them to follow their passion. And if they haven't found their passion, to not give up and to keep looking for that, that it's out there and your purpose in life, there is a purpose and you just need to find it.
Pietra, thank you so much for coming by and telling us your story.
Oh, thanks for having me.
If you'd like to find out more information about music therapy, like Petey said, you can go to musictherapy.org. Or if you're interested in seeing Petey perform with Del's Groove or her brother Tony, you can go to the Del's Groove Facebook page or her personal Facebook page, which is Pietra Teresa. Thanks so much for joining me again this Sunday. I hope you're having a great weekend. I'm Kathy Romano. Enjoy the rest of your day.
This has been Her Story with Kathy Romano. Her Story is produced by WBEN-FM in Philadelphia and airs weekly or on demand on your mobile device. Listen or subscribe at 957benfm.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.